You've heard our open themes with listeners talking about their vocations.
Missouri dairy farmers, love issues, etc.
And what they're doing while listening to issues, etc.
This is Mark from Michigan, and I am a lawnmower listener. We love issues, etc.
We're looking for more of these elements to include in our open themes. Tell us about your vocation, hobby, or what you do while listening to Issues Etc. Call the Issues Etc. comment line 24/7 at 618-223-8382. If you make a mistake, just start over. 618-223-8382. Thanks for listening, and thanks for contributing to Issues Etc. 618-223-8382.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. As we speak, a court in the UK is expected to make a decision probably tomorrow about where a little baby who is terminally ill, Charlie Gard, is going to die. Not only where he's going to die, because, well, the court's not going to let him get any treatment, that's for darn sure, but also where he's going to die. Will he be kept in the hospital? Will his parents, who want to take him home, be allowed? God forbid that parents would be allowed to take their child home when this child is going to die. Terrible story of government intrusion. Just be glad if you live in Great Britain. Pray that your children do not get sick with a terminal illness, because it isn't good. We're going to get an update on Charlie Gard. Wesley Smith joins us, senior fellow at the Discovery Institute Center on Human Exceptionalism, author of several books, including Culture of Death, The Age of Due Harm Medicine. He's a columnist for National Review Online and author of a recent column titled The High Cost, Charlie Gard Coercion. Wesley, welcome back.
Thanks very much. This is a pretty good example of due harm medicine, isn't it?
Yeah. They're doing as much harm as they possibly can. How do we get to the point where a court is going to essentially take custody of Charlie Gard, or has taken custody of Charlie Gard, through no fault of Charlie's parents?
Well, part of it is the different laws in the UK than we have in the United States. Over there, this is what's called a feudal care case. That is, where doctors are wanting to refuse wanted life-sustaining treatment that the family wants. And the treatment isn't being stopped because it doesn't work. It's being stopped because it does work. So it's, in essence, the doctors are making a value judgment as to when Charlie should die over what the parents want. And over in the UK, doctors have much greater say over such circumstances, particularly for incompetent patients, such as a child, than is here in the United States. Although we've had our own cases similar to Charlie Gard's without the concept of not being able to take the child out of the hospital, and I can discuss those if you'd like. Secondly, there's also a circumstance over there that's a little murky to me, but apparently that a child, the best interests of the child are not necessarily determined by the parents. So there is apparently the greater ability in the medical system for doctors to overturn what parents might want for children in terms of their health care. So there is a slight difference in law, but what you really have here is a conflict and a contest between whether people can decide these kinds of late-stage issues for themselves, or whether, and it is happening here, whether the bioethics movement, utilitarian view that some people's lives are not worth saving, that some people's lives are not worth spending money on, ad hoc healthcare rationing, if you will prevail. So what's happening to Charlie Gard matters very much here as well as over there.
All right. That's the difference. That's kind of the legal difference here. But the futile care theory is what is fueling this travesty, this legal, medical, ethical travesty. Take us back through what this absolutely wrongheaded, diabolical idea is.
The idea here is that there's some people's lives are not worth living, and that even if a patient has decided they want life-sustaining treatment, even if they have put it in an advanced medical directive like we're always told to fill out, if doctors decide that they believe that the quality of the patient's life in those circumstances is not worth living, that they say it violates their ethics to maintain the suffering, even if that's what the patient wants, then under futile care theory or medical futility, futile care, inappropriate care, it's called different things, then doctors have a unilateral right to refuse service and cut off that treatment. This is a contested theory in the United States, but there are states where this is permitted, particularly Texas. Texas has a law that says if a doctor comes to that decision, the doctor must take it to a bioethics committee, which is made up of internal people, mostly who work at the hospital and perhaps a few outside volunteers. And if they decide that the doctor is right, that this care should not be provided, then the patient has 10 days to find another hospital to provide the treatment, which is often very difficult because these are expensive patients to care for, and money gets very inextricably tied up to this. This can happen to elderly people. It can happen to dying people. It can happen to very severely disabled people. It can happen to babies. In 1994, in Spokane, Washington, baby Ryan was born, Ryan Nagoyan. Baby Ryan was born prematurely and had failing kidneys. The child was put on kidney dialysis to maintain him to see if he could be a candidate for a transplant, kidney transplant. When it was determined that he could not be, doctors came to the parents and said, and I've seen the court testimony, quote, "The time has come for your baby to die," close quote. And they insisted they were taking baby Ryan off life support and off kidney dialysis. The parents objected to this. They got a lawyer. It's terrible when sometimes you have to get a lawyer to go to the hospital. They got an injunction, a temporary injunction against removing Ryan from the dialysis. The hospital administration turned them into the protective services for child abuse. What was the abuse? Getting the injunction, keeping Ryan alive, because doctors decided this was not a life worth living. This was causing too much suffering. When that didn't work, doctors testified, and I write about this in the Culture of Death book. The doctors testified, I've seen the declaration, that Ryan had zero chance, that was the term they used, zero, of being weaned off of the dialysis. Well, before the judge decided who had the final say, the parents who love Ryan, or the strangers, the doctors and the bioethicists, another doctor in Seattle agreed to take the care. Unlike in the Charlie Gard case, the Spokane Hospital cooperated in the transfer of care of the patient to Seattle. And guess what? He was successfully weaned off of the kidney dialysis and life support. Ryan lived to be age 4. He was a happy boy. He gave high fives. He was the apple of his parents' eyes. If the doctors had the right and obtained a court order to impose their ethics, their values, this is not a medical judgment. This is a value judgment. This isn't saying whether or not somebody has an illness. This is saying it is better to die today than next week or next month. That's not medical. That's values. If the doctors had prevailed in that circumstance, Ryan never would have had those 4 years, and the parents never would have had the 4 years with their son. This does happen. It happens from time to time. It is a creature of utilitarian bioethics. It is because healthcare is moving away from the Hippocratic Oath and into these kind of subjective value judgments over who's worth paying for and who's worth maintaining and who isn't. You also get into the right to die issue and the assisted suicide controversies, and we're beginning to create a caste, C-A-S-T-E, of people who are, one, eligible for assisted suicide if they want it, or two, if they don't want it, if they want to fight for life, well, autonomy has its limits and we're going to cut off care because they should not be around. This is very dangerous stuff. It has not yet taken over our healthcare system, but it has made inroads.
Often cost, and you just mentioned that, cost is cited as a factor that it's simply going to be too expensive to do this. It would be prohibitively expensive. In the case of Charlie Gard, expense really wasn't the issue, was it?
No, because the parents had actually gone on to a crowdsource funding and raised more than $1 million. And actually, if they had been able to do what they wanted to 7-8 months ago, which was take Charlie out of the hospital where he was, bring him to the United States to the specialist who said he would try to treat him here with an experimental treatment, which was refused by the hospital and refused by the courts as supposedly in Charlie's best interest. Well, that would have saved the NHS, the socialized medical system, their money, because they would not have had Charlie's intensive care to pay for. So in this situation, it's about control. It's about power. I am really believing that if this family had been able to escape the clutches of the, let's call it the expertocracy, shall we? The rule by experts. If they'd been able to actually escape the clutches of that and the power of that, there might have been other people who might have said, wait a minute, I don't want to put up with your determinations over my loved one's life and death. So now if they don't let the child be taken home, well, I will come to the conclusion, or at least it'll be a reasonable conclusion, that perhaps that's a way of punishing the family, Chris and Connie, for daring to stand up to the system and to warn other people there are worse things than having us make decisions.
I'm not an attorney, you are, and obviously we're dealing with British law here, which is obviously in some way fundamentally defective, but...
you think?
do the parents, I mean, even after the child has died, regardless of where the court decides when and where the child will die, do these parents just simply have to sit and take this?
Yes, I'm afraid so, because this was not done without the rule of law. This was done by court order. So this was done through a rule of law, circumstance, court authority. The European Court of Human Rights refused to take the case, which is pretty remarkable when you think about it. So there's not much the parents are going to be able to do. And in this country, there's often not much we can do. Now, sometimes people will try to, if somebody dies after futile care determination, which of course has happened in this country on many occasions, you know, you can bring a lawsuit, say, for medical malpractice or something of that sort. Juries rarely will award what damages because the doctors will come in and there's a lot of respect for doctors. Plus, you know, in our system, one of our features is that when somebody dies wrongly, there has to be a damage to the family, which it can be measured in dollars and cents. And let's say a 95-year-old woman dies after a futile care determination that her age prohibited her from continuing to receive the treatment. There's not a lot of financial harm that is done. Plus, you probably can't even get a lawyer. So what has to happen in these cases is that here, the only way to really prevail in a futile care case is not after the fact is a fait accompli, but beforehand, you can often, as the Ryans, Baby Ryan's folks did, you might be able to get a judge to say, hold on just a second here. You know, and you're taking off treatment, and this is important for your listeners to understand, Todd. You're taking off treatment not because it doesn't work. You're taking off treatment because it does work. In other words, it isn't the treatment that is actually futile. It is, in a sense, the patient being declared futile and therefore should not receive this treatment that is actually working, because keeping the patient alive is not what the doctors think is right. What the doctors think is right is death.
So it should be called futile patient theory, shouldn't it?
Yeah. Yes, I think it should. In fact, maybe I'll start doing that.
We'll take a break. When we come back, Wesley Smith will be with us for another 10 minutes. We're getting an update on the Charlie Gard story, as sad as it is. He's senior fellow at the Discovery Institute Center on Human Exceptionalism and author of a recent column titled The High Cost of Charlie Gard Coercion. When we come back, we have probably, you know, a legal insulation from this here in the United States. I wonder what would Wesley's advice be to another parent out living there in UK whose child develops a terminally ill, very rare disease. I mean, I'm not a lawyer, but I'd say get out of England. Go someplace else. We'll be right back.
Is America going the way of the Roman Empire? A growing number of Christians think so, and I'm one of them.
Rod Dreher talking about his presentation at the 2017 Fall Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
That's why I say that Christians today should take a new look at the way the early Benedictine monks who emerged out of the ruins of Rome, responded to the collapse of their civilization. We can learn from them how to build stable lives of prayer, Bible study, and worship in strong communities. The Benedict option, as I call it, is not about running away from the world. It's about learning the practices of discipleship that enable us to stand firm for Christ against the world for the sake of the world.
You can meet and hear Rod Dreher making the case for the Benedict option at the Fall Making the Case Conference, Friday, November 10th and Saturday, November 11th in Houston, Texas. Registration is $120. Child care is free. Learn more and register at issuesetc.org.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Our cities are some of the greatest mission fields on the planet, but the footprint of the church is shrinking. We dare not shrink from our cities. Christ is needed now in our urban areas. From chaos, turmoil, decay, death, and destruction, Jesus brings peace, hope, resurrection, eternal life, and rebuilding. And you can help by being a hero for the city. Find out how at lcms.org/citymission or on Facebook at LCMS City Mission. Every city needs a hero. Capes and helmets not required.
Do you wish your Lutheran school offered Latin, Greek, or logic? What about German or calculus? Right now, local Lutheran schools in two different states are utilizing Wittenberg Academy to expand their course offerings. Whether it's Latin for third graders or logic for seniors in high school, Wittenberg Academy can help. For your homeschooler or for your brick-and-mortar Lutheran school, we have solutions. To find out more, visit wittenbergacademy.org.
Welcome back. We're getting an update on the Charlie Gard case. Wesley Smith, the Discovery Institute, is our guest. Wesley, what if you got a phone call from a young couple with a child like Charlie Gard? You know, they're living in Great Britain, and they say, look, our child has a terminal illness. We've been reading all about Charlie Gard in online and in the papers and things like that. Maybe it's not a rare disease, but we're afraid to take this kid into a British hospital because the state might take custody of them and of the child's care. What would you say to that person?
Well, I would say they needed to get a lawyer over there, because I certainly wouldn't be able to help them in terms of law, who has a sanctity of life perspective and would be willing, as Chris and Connie's lawyer has, to fight tooth and tongue for that child. And I would also suggest to get a lawyer who would try to work with the system, because often you can work with systems and bureaucracies rather than just start from the let's go to war angle, because they're stronger than you. So find a lawyer who understands these cases, certainly understands the UK law, both with regard to the who has the ultimate say in terms of treatment of incompetent patients, the Mental Capacities Act over there, which is really, I was warned when it was passed by a pro-lifer over there that this would be an abomination, and I thought she was exaggerating, but I was wrong. And also somebody who understands the rights of the child laws in UK, which are unique and not similar to those that we have here. I also have a few names that I would refer them to.
Okay. It's best to be forewarned. So you've spent a career forewarning people a lot of times, yeah. Kind of spitting in the wind with regard to that. So what forewarning would you offer us that comes straight out of the Charlie Gard case?
We must have legislators pass laws that reject this idea of feudal care. If a doctor thinks that efficacious treatment, meaning treatment that's working, keeping the patient alive, is something that he or she just doesn't think is right, and we can understand that, then by all means, let them find another doctor to provide the treatment for the patient. But pending such a transfer, and nobody would be against that kind of a transfer, pending that kind of a transfer, the law, it seems to me, should state that treatment will be maintained during the process of the time it takes to find a new arrangement, rather than the doctor being able to withdraw treatment. And certainly we must not allow laws like Texas's, where the decision is made by a star chamber-like meeting of an administrative body within a hospital with no record, no right of appeal, and so forth. These things, if they're going to be fights, need to be in court, need to be with the newspapers able to report on it, need to have rights of appeal, need to have cross-examination, and that kind of thing.
Okay, and for individual families who fear that they face this with one of their loved ones, be it a child or a spouse or a parent, what would you say to them?
First off, try to humanize your patient, your loved one, as much as you can with the medical team, because the more the medical team sees, you know, they have a tough job in those trenches. It's very difficult, and I don't want anyone to think I'm putting down doctors and nurses. I'm not. You know, I just recently had a situation where my mother died of Alzheimer's last August, and the doctors who took care of her were splendid, and it's not easy. So don't go in. I'm not certainly arguing that people need to go in with a chip on your shoulder, but I do think people need to go in being aware that there could be a conflict. When that conflict arises, do your best to mediate it in a productive manner. Bring in help if you need help. A pastor, a good friend, if necessary, a lawyer, somebody who understands these things. Do not go in assuming bad faith, because the doctors and nurses are in our country are terrific. The bioethics views, I mean, these are not bad human beings, but the attitudes and the values of bioethics, I think, are moving us away from a do-no-harm healthcare system to a do-harm healthcare system. So be aware that this could happen, and if you start to see signs that it is happening, be ready to, you know, start taking some proactive measures to defend your loved one. But do it in a way that is polite and that is civil, because you're much more likely to do well when people want you to be happy than if you upset them. You know what I'm saying? You're a pastor.
Yeah, with only about 30 seconds here, would it be a good idea to, before you go to the hospital, to inquire? There's more than one choice in metropolitan areas of hospitals. It would be a good idea to inquire as to their kind of ethics position. About 30 seconds.
I've urged people to see, you know, many hospitals have internal futile care rules that are not legal in terms of state law. You could ask about it, but often they're all about the same, and it doesn't hurt to ask. But again, if you go in, and everyone should realize that patients need advocates, and there should be a strong family and friend presence and a humanizing presence. Say, you know, my mom used to own a beauty shop. You know, she was really good about that. Or this is my mom did this for me. You know what I'm saying? Make sure people are humanized. Make sure that people know that they've got people paying attention and watching, and do assume good faith on the part of doctors and nurses unless shown otherwise.
Wesley Smith is senior fellow at the Discovery Institute Center on Human Exceptionalism, author of several books, including Culture of Death, The Age of Do-Harm Medicine. He's a columnist for National Review Online and author of a recent column titled The High Cost of Charlie Gard Coercion. You can read it and purchase Culture of Death at issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Wesley, thanks, and keep up the good work.
Thanks, Todd.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll continue our series with Pastor Jonathan Fisk on raising Christian children in an age of progressivism. We'll also be looking forward to Sunday morning, talking with Dr. Carl Fikencher about the parables of the hidden treasure, the pearl of great price, and the fishing net. I'm Todd Wilkin. I'll talk with you tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Trinity Orchard Farm is settled between two rivers, showing the way to the water of life. For worship that is reverent, relevant, and refreshing like pure water, or for excellent education in a unique setting, check out our church and school. We're just 5 miles north of Highway 370 on Highway 94 in St. Charles County. Visit us on the web at trinityorchardfarm.com. That's trinityorchardfarm.com. Our phone number is 636-250-3350.
We would like to overlook the difficulty of daily repentance and death to our sins in the interest of progressing to a more advanced spirituality.
Rebecca Curtis from her new audiobook, Ladylike, Living Biblically.
Somehow, spiritual advancement always amounts to our getting to spend more time on the things we like and calling it stewardship or service.
You can purchase and download an audio version of Ladylike, Living Biblically at Amazon, Audible, and iTunes. Ladylike, Living Biblically by Rebecca Curtis and Rose Adel.